And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
The latest report by the renowned Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is in. So what's it say? The conclusions will affect every person, bird, tortoise, flower, and sea squirt on Earth for many years to come. You'll hear the summary, and then we're heading off to San Francisco to check on the status of the cleanup of the devastating oil spill that occurred less than 2 weeks ago in San Francisco Bay. That and the Nature News is coming up when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
This last weekend, delegates assembled in Valencia, Spain, to receive the final assessment report on climate change. The results of years of study and synthesis by over 400 scientists from around the world. This is, to date, the most comprehensive and authoritative study on climate change, and will form the basis for the drafting of national and international policy at the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, convening in Bali, December 3rd through the 14th. This is a very significant next step in crafting an international response to climate change, the only way, many feel, the challenges of global warming can be effectively addressed. You will hear segments of the press conference announcing the findings during the weekly Earth Summit, coming up in just a moment. In segment two, following this week's Nature News, we'll be talking with Cheryl Surface, who directed the planning for the emergency cleanup of the recent oil spill in San Francisco Bay, the worst ecological disaster in that area in decades. Coordinating the containment and massive cleanup effort takes a surprising amount of machinery, advanced technologies, manpower, and experience. An army of hazmat-clad responders, backed up by an armada of ships, planes, helicopters, and trucks, fanned out throughout the waters and shorelines to snatch up every bit of the toxic ooze. As well, local citizens launched their own response, taking to the tarry beaches to pull the thousands of devastated birds from their quagmire. Cheryl provides the perspective from one who takes on the responsibility to assure that safety for humans and impacted creatures and environments is directed by those experienced in similar oil cleanup efforts. That's all coming up, but now, as always, it's time for the Weekly Earth Summit. Welcome to the Weekly Earth Summit, the most important 15 minutes on Earth. I'm your host, Sydney Wildsmith. This past weekend, the efforts of hundreds of the world's leading scientists culminated in the release of the synthesis report of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Today, we bring you excerpts from the news conference held to announce its findings. What you are about to hear will form the basis of how we, as the people and societies of this Earth, respond to the rapid changes we will experience as the effects of global warming continue to be felt from the deepest reaches of our oceans to the highest peaks and mountains, and to everything in between, which forms the thin living veil. This will bring you up to the minute on the status of global warming on planet Earth. So now, we listen in as the conference gets underway.
Mr. Secretary General, on behalf of the core writing team for this synthesis report, all the authors who contributed to the working group reports on which this synthesis report is based, as well as all the members of the IPCC, it's a great privilege for me to to give you a copy, the first copy of the summary for policymakers of this document, sir.
Thank you very much. It's a great time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If you could take your seats, please. Good morning and welcome to this press conference. Sitting at the center is, of course, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Mr. Ban Ki-moon, and Dr. Rajendra Pachauri, the Chairman of the IPCC. Next to Dr. Pachauri is Michel Jarraud, the Secretary General of the World Meteorological Organization, and next to the Secretary General is Mr. Achim Steiner, the Executive Director of the UN Environmental Program. The Secretary General will have a few opening remarks, and then Dr. Pachauri will present the IPCC synthesis report, and then we will open the floor to your questions, and we will also take a few questions that are being emailed by other journalists. Secretary General, you have the floor.
With the IPCC's latest work, the stage is now set for the United Nations Climate Change Conference, which gets underway in 2 weeks in Bali, Indonesia. This conference is so very critical. It is in Bali that governments will have to provide political solutions to what we are now well-established scientific facts. The breakthrough needed in Bali is an agreement to launch negotiations for a comprehensive climate change deal that all nations can embrace, developed and developing alike. Scientists have now done their work, and I call on political leaders to do theirs and agree not only to launch negotiations, but also to conclude them by 2009. Having just witnessed with my own eyes a few days ago in Antarctica and in the Amazon rainforest, the effects of a changing climate, I can tell you with assurance that global, sweeping, concerted action is needed now. There is no time to waste. Thank you very much. And now I will turn the proceedings over to Dr. Pachauri. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Secretary General. It's a privilege for me to be sitting by your side and presenting some of the major findings of the synthesis report, which is part of the fourth assessment report of the IPCC. I'm going to present some of the findings, but at the end, I'm also going to raise some crucial questions, which incidentally, I, as an individual, have formulated, and which I hope the delegates that would take part in the conference of the parties in Bali will consider and ponder over at some length. The fourth assessment report, of which the synthesis report is the final part, is an enormous effort, as the Secretary General has just informed you. It took about 450 lead authors from over 130 countries, and including, of course, the 2,500 scientific expert reviewers and 800 contributing authors. I'd also like to highlight our findings related to extreme events, and I would now mention just a few as an example. The frequency of heavy precipitation events has increased over most areas. Then from 1900 to 2005, precipitation increased significantly in eastern parts of North and South America, Northern Europe, and Northern and Central Asia. But it declined in the Sahel, the Mediterranean, Southern Africa, and parts of Southern Asia. And globally, the area affected by drought has likely increased since the 1970s. There's now higher confidence that in the third assessment report, in projected patterns of warming and other regional scale features, including changes in wind patterns, precipitation, and some aspects of extremes and sea ice. The rate of global average sea level rise has risen from 1.8 millimeters per year to 3.1 millimeters per year from 1961 to 1993. The reasons for sea level rise has been due to thermal expansion, melting glaciers and ice caps, and the polar ice sheets. Projected sea level rise at the end of the 21st century will be in the range 18 to 59 centimeters. It's projected to be in the range of 18 to 59 centimeters. Human-induced warming would lead to some impacts that are abrupt or irreversible, and these include partial loss of ice sheets on ice polar land, which could imply meters of sea level rise, major changes in coastlines and inundation of low-lying areas, great effects in river deltas and low-lying islands, and approximately 20 to 30% of species assessed so far are likely to be at increased risk of extinction. The large-scale and persistent changes in the meridional overturning circulation, referred to as the MOC, will have impacts on marine ecosystem productivity, fisheries, ocean CO2 uptake, and terrestrial vegetation. Fortunately, humanity has within its reach a number of solutions, some of which are related to our perception of problems and attendant solutions, and our ability to put in place policy measures that would facilitate the implementation of those solutions. A wide variety of policies and instruments are available to governments to create the incentives for mitigation action. Stabilization levels assessed can be achieved by deployment of a portfolio of technologies that are either currently available or expected to be commercialized in the coming decades. And an effective carbon price signal could realize significant mitigation potential in all sectors. So this is an important finding. If we want action, then clearly there has to be a price attached to carbon which will move us towards a low carbon economy. I'd also like to raise some equity issues. The impacts of climate change are not going to be felt uniformly. For instance, in Africa, between 75 to 250 million people are projected to be exposed to increased water stress. This will be by 2020. And in some countries, yields from rain-fed agriculture would be reduced by 50%. And in Asia, you have problems of freshwater availability, coastal areas being affected, particularly the mega-delta regions, which are really at the highest risk from sea flooding. And the small island states are particularly vulnerable because they would not only suffer from inundation, storm surge, erosion, and other such hazards, but also by mid-century, reduced water resources in many small island states will make it impossible for them to meet their own needs for water.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pachauri. I will ask you to raise your hand if you want to ask a question.
There seems to be a disconnect with the urgency with which you, sirs, are now talking and the glacial slowness of the political process towards any kind of agreement that begins to meet the scale of the cuts in carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases that are needed. Does that, my perception there, coincide with yours? And if so, what should be done about it?
I think by this time, the scientists have determined in one voice unequivocally the very quickening pace of global warming phenomenon. And as you said, I have witnessed myself with my own eyes while visiting Antarctica. While I was able to appreciate such a wonderful and very rare landscape, but I was very alarmed. It was very disturbing for me personally to see all this quickening and process of melting ice.
Thank you. Before we go to the floor, I'll read out a question that's been emailed to us from the Sunday Independent in South Africa and maybe from Mr. Steiner. Senior UN environmental officials have said on numerous occasions that climate change can be beaten, and that there are real affordable ways to deal with climate change. Could you please give us examples of real and affordable ways individuals, companies, and governments can deal with climate change?
Thank you. I think the report, and if you look at the synthesis reports, identifies the major contributing sectors in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. And what is striking as a first example is that it is our infrastructure, our buildings, these very edifices that we have built over the last 100, 200 years and continue to build even in the year 2007 as if there was no global warming. we can achieve significant greenhouse gas reductions simply by dealing with energy efficiency use, by introducing innovative technology. And just a couple of days ago at the governing board of the International Labour Organization, the discussion was about how climate change would in fact create jobs in the future. I think Dr. Pachauri can provide many figures in terms of how the IPCC has tried to capture the economics, the economic rationale of in fact addressing global warming, providing innovation in our industries, creating new jobs and also creating new markets. In addition to that, we have the challenge of adaptation, and here it is more about how do we avoid losing what we have gained over hundreds of years of development, and here the equation is a much more difficult one. But even here, the report shows that there are gains to be made, and if you look at the whole question of reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation, we can have win-win-win propositions for the world, but for that we have to agree, and we have to agree quickly.
Hi, Richard Black from the BBC. Perhaps I could ask Achim Steiner just to enlarge on the comments that he made there. It's quite clear from the summary for policymakers that if nothing changes in terms of the global regime, we're going to see emissions rise further and faster, greater use of coal, etc., etc. Yet you outlined your view that it is possible to turn that around. So could you give us a sort of roadmap for decarbonizing the global economy relevant to industrialized countries, middle-ranking countries, and the less developed countries, how you think things ought to proceed in the next decade or so?
In very simple terms, if we want to meet the targets that the IPCC has given us, it has also given us the numbers that need to be achieved in terms of removing greenhouse gases from the atmosphere. I mentioned the building sector, the transport sector, the energy generation sector, and also the agriculture and forestry sectors. In all of these sectors, the IPCC, and indeed Sir Nicholas Stern also with his report, and many other scientific reports that have contributed to our knowledge, including from the private sector, have shown areas in where we can make gains. The simple light bulb example has become, if you want, a symbol for that measure, but with one light bulb you can reduce your electricity consumption by 4/5. It is the simplest act almost for a consumer today, and there are countries who have replaced their entire stock of light bulbs already on this planet. There are corporations that are able to use their energy more efficiently. We can look at also the issue of transport. Why is it that in the year 2007, when we have technology to motor and power vehicles with 4 litres per 100 kilometres, we are still building and selling cars with 16, 18 litres per 100 kilometres? We have hybrid technology, we have others that have been in the pipeline for a long time. It is also time that industry and the private sector offer the market the products that will allow us to achieve those greenhouse gas emission reductions. And here the report makes a very important distinction between the economic mitigation potential and the market mitigation potential. The private sector, the consumer and the markets need signals that governments can give through legislation, incentives and subsidies that make sense from a carbon management perspective, but may not make sense from me as an individual or me as a corporation. That is why the IPCC, that is why the negotiations in Bali are so critical, because unless governments provide the markets of this world the right signals and the right incentives, these transitions that are listed in these reports will simply not happen, because the market alone cannot deliver. But the market with the right incentives and the right regulatory frameworks is perfectly capable of delivering gigatons of reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in the timelines that the IPCC has shown so very clearly in its report.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of my fellow conference officer, Susan Hansen, and myself, I'd like to wish you farewell and have a good journey home. Thank you.
It's off to Bali now, as the focus shifts from summary to national and international policies. As representatives from 180 nations, world leaders, NGOs, and media debate and formulate the follow-up to the Kyoto Protocols between December 3rd through the 14th. This world-changing event will define the strategies that are to counter this global threat. We'll be reporting from Bali as it happens. Until then, we'll return next week with the weekly Earth Summit. It's bad enough that global warming is creating such a variety of challenges that range from flooding from too much rain to droughts from too little. As well, we have to live with the direct consequences when we humans make little mistakes that result in some giant messes. In just a moment, we talk with the woman who directed the planning for the cleanup of the massive toxic fuel spill by the COSCO Busan less than 2 weeks ago in San Francisco Bay. That's coming up when your voice of the earth continues, here on the Wild Side News.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.